God fucking no. That was
You didn't like it that much?
There was something.
Nah, you can have it, but
there was something off about that. I remembered that flavor.
In my mind there's something on. Why do you remember it for?
From a past life.
You're like, yeah, I remember that flavor. I don't know where it was.
Welcome to episode 500 of Woo! Game of Ones. And welcome our very special guest,
and friend
of
the hater. Show, and
Mountain Dew voodoo hater, David J. Peterson, everybody.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. But let's start this off right. You've recorded 500 episodes of this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Can you believe?
The GRM had the same response. He was like, what?
And I've been like a special guest on like
499.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's been a lot at this point. Remember when it was brand new? Remember the first time that I met you? You kicked open a door in the middle of a con and you said, Macho Maroon, which means?
Macho Maroon.
Hello. With respect, sir. But yeah, that was fun. I think I told you about that afterwards. But like, it was a whole like set, right? And so that they had built on stage for something else. But that was where we were having our discussion. And so I'm sitting there, you know, waiting to be introduced. And I asked this guy who was just like the behind the scenes guy. I said, "Hey, does that door work?" I'm like, "That one in the middle?" He's like, "Oh yeah, it works." I'm like, fuck this, dude. I'm going to go over that door.
That's what's up. No one expected you to come out through that door.
Including
but
you.
I had no idea. And I had never laid eyes on you before. We were so excited that the language creator and writer from Game of Thrones, David J. Peterson, was going to be on stage with us at a con. And this is going to be so fun. And then the way that you came out, we were already out there waiting like the plebes that we are. And then you literally kicked open a door screaming Dothraki. I think your hair was pretty long at that point. It was pretty amazing. What does Macho Maroon mean exactly?
Macho Maroon. So, okay. So you have the root is Cham, right? And Cham has to do with, it means respectful. So Az Jamar would be just a nominalized version of that. So it means respect. And then the little M part, that's the same thing from that George R. R. Martin created. So remember, Khalaka Dothra Imranha, that's in the books. That's a different one. That's inside. Okay, it's a different one. M means with, right? Just with.
With an apostrophe after it?
Yeah, because the apostrophe is just indicating elision. So in other words, it's ma, but when it comes before something begins with a vowel, you just alight it. So it just runs right in. And then chomar. I don't know why I'm saying cham.
I was going to say chomar.
Thank you. My God. Ridiculous. So when achomar is modified by the preposition ma, it's put into the ablative case. The ablative is achomaroon, and then so the whole thing is machomaroon, and so it means with respect. That's how you greet somebody in Dothraki.
Cool.
So, you know, presumably somebody that you are greeting with respect, you know. It's like, you know.
Bold of you to come on stage respecting before you even knew what you were getting yourself
into.
You had
no idea, yeah.
Yeah. If I had known that I would be sitting here today,
you would have left.
I would have run
too,
the
man.
Other way.
If I knew you would be here, I'd be gone too.
Man.
Like, what is going on?
At the Hilton Anaheim.
For everyone.
Yeah. Actually, if I can ask you a question, because I'm super curious. I mean, you're sitting here and this is your
we're interviewing
500th
you,
episode of this. No, sir. Not until I say.
Please go.
But it's like, all right. Like, how did this podcast start? You sat down, right, and said, we're going to do this. Like, what? Was it an outgrowth of Harry Potter? Is that where it started?
Kind of. It was more of just an outgrowth of how much I love Game of Thrones.
Okay.
I thought the show was so good, and I had another podcast at the time that we it was a podcast. We called it a podcast about friendship, where we just hung out, a couple friends and I, and we would start on every episode. Hannah wasn't on that one.
Yeah, understandably.
Right. Because we're not actually friends. No.
Yeah, right. It must have been so boring.
It was very boring without you, yes. And we would like start out every episode with a YouTube video and laugh with each other, and that was the whole vibe. But whenever GOT first aired, we all basically changed our lives from we think funny videos are cool to let's talk about Game of Thrones.
Cool.
At least for that amount of time. And we had an episode of that podcast called Game of Owns. We were like, Game of Thrones? more like Game of Owns. And that dumb idea was eventually just turned into, well, we should just do that thing. So it's just been a process of continuing to have conversations about the TV show and all the other stuff that's come from it. Books and weird situations like making friends with you and having conversations like this in hotel rooms. Just kind of a chronological collection of experiences based off of how good of a story and now multiple TV shows that George made out of his subconscious.
Yeah.
Do you know what's kind of cool, though, that we haven't talked about is that the first episode I ever recorded on the podcast at all was in this hotel. Not this room, but it was in this hotel in Anaheim. Yeah, isn't that kind of wild?
And we shared a mic for that episode, too.
Oh, my God.
Her first episode. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kind of – it's pretty magical, so.
Holy smoke.
That's kind of wild.
Which episode was that, like, or around?
We were talking about
it today. Hannah thinks it was, like, episode 5. I told her this episode 500. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was, like, 480, right? You've only been on the show for, like, 20 episodes, right?
If I look it up, it was – either the late 100, like around 200. So it's either like 190 something or like 250 something.
My goodness.
A while. It's been a while.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So it was right here.
Wow.
Not in the suite. We've upgraded a little.
Yeah.
Since then.
Man, you got an iron here.
Yeah. I know.
Bottle of water that you probably shouldn't drink.
No, that's not our water.
Yeah. Can't do that. But that is really, really something.
I say the same for you, man. Incredible. I mean, I remember when we first started having conversations with you, that con we were talking about when we first met, I remember looking across the stage at you and thinking, this is the first time we met with each other and we're having this conversation about the kind of like this, but in front of all of these people. But I was just enjoying your company. I was like, this dude's cool. Like, this is someone I could be friends with. But we were in the middle of doing a thing like this, and it wasn't really in our control because we were doing a presentation for people. And look how much that's grown and changed.
Yeah.
It's been a weird thing, this whole process.
Yeah. And now I've spent time at your family's home.
Yes.
Just north of Arkansas. I've been your best man at all three of your weddings.
I've had a lot of weddings. Yeah. And I think really the problem is that David keeps interrupting them in strange ways. Like, you're supposed to just be my best man. Instead, you made it all about you.
Why would I be there? After all, I'm called the best man for a reason. You're the groom. Who's the best one, though?
Everyone gets so excited when we talk about you.
Oh.
About the job that you do on the show. There's something unique about it because no one else really does what you do. And that's what I was trying to get at. When I first met you at that convention, your life was a lot different. And the amount of projects that you've skyrocketed into and led. I could name some, but I feel like it'd be unfair just to like name popular stuff that you've done to justify how cool it is. But Google David's name. You've worked on some really cool stuff. You can mention them if you want, but the change between now and then has been really incredible. And now we're recording fresh after watching. You just watched the last half with us of episode 5 of Hot D. Halfway into the successor show of GOT. And it seems like the momentum of all this isn't going to go away. It's not slowing down. We had a long gap between season 7 and then we had season 8, and it was short because it was only 6 episodes.
Right.
And then we had a really long gap, and the world has changed so much in that gap too because we had COVID as well. And now that show that got announced after probably like 2 months, wasn't it? 2 months or so, 2.5 months after season 8 ended, GOT ended, they announced that Hot D would be coming eventually. Now we're halfway through it.
And the show's actually good.
Yeah.
I feel like it's at least, okay, that's our opinion. We haven't talked to you about it at all. And so I'm excited to hear your overall thoughts on basically where we're at with season 5. But from where Zach and I are sitting, the show is actually good and entertaining and fun to watch.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, so a couple of things. First, one thing I did want to mention, because, of course, COVID did happen. And there's just something, I mean, it's kind of strange. It's a little personal. Obviously, for a while, we were just stuck in our homes with COVID. And so, I was doing my thing for, translating for House of the Dragon. And I was on general distribution over there, just the emails. And it was oddly comforting to me, especially being not only in the United States, but living in West Garden Grove, which is kind of a a bastion of conservative mania in otherwise liberal California, of people just like not even like not following COVID protocols, but actively flouting them and really like insulting people who even took it seriously. It was oddly comforting to see how seriously they were taking COVID protocols on the set for House of the Dragon. Because like I was just getting the email blast, but it was like there was always the generic stuff in there. Every so often there would be the like reminders, you know, please do this, 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 and this. It was honestly just comforting. It was nice. It was like somewhere in the world, somebody is at least taking this seriously. Because of course, with this show, it's like you can say whatever you want rhetoric wise, but the truth is, like an outbreak of COVID will seriously mess up a production. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you can't just pretend it's not a real thing. You have to actually take it seriously, and they were. So that was just a bizarre little, you know, I guess, you know, anecdote from my experience working on it. But yeah, so I know that I mentioned to you before, right, that just reading the dialogue I had to translate, I was like, this was some of the
Ice and Fire Con.
Yeah, this was some of the best writing that I had to work with on any show. The only thing is you never know how that's going to translate on screen, which again was something for me that was also really, I mean, that took some getting used to, like, you know, getting into Hollywood. For the one thing, like, even if you read a script, not knowing exactly what it was going to look like on screen. Second, not knowing if it was going to be any good. And third, not knowing how people would actually respond. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if this thing was actually going to be popular, even if you did think it was good. So it's always hard to judge a script just based on a script. But I mean, I knew that the writing was really good, was really strong, and I really enjoyed it. And so, you know, yeah, seeing the show, we're five episodes in now, and seeing that, you know,
you're right,
they're doing it, man. they're doing it. They're hitting their beats. The actors are giving it their all. It's put together very well. It's not only very useful, but it was very important that this one be good, because because HBO took so much time off. There was so much publicity about the other prequels getting canceled at various stages, including one that I worked on, right?
That you didn't want to be canceled.
Yeah.
You like Blood Moon?
Okay, so I never actually saw it, so I haven't seen the pilot. I'm super curious.
But you said you liked the writing on Hot D.
Oh, yeah.
So did you like the writing on Blood Moon, too?
I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary about it.
Mm.
It's not like it was either like good or bad, but it was like I was reading through stuff on House of the Dragon and like, you know, damn, this is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, like I've worked on tons of shows and it's just like, okay, yeah, this is it's doing its thing. And sometimes that's fine. Sometimes it's a little iffy, but sometimes it's just fine or whatever. But I mean, I just wanted it to survive because I created this damn language for the Children of the Forest.
Right.
That's gotten axed twice. And I also created the Andalish language, you know, for it, which I thought would have been fun. That was a fun and unique project, just from the standpoint of a language creator trying to create something that if you applied the similar sound changes that happened with English would sound like English in the modern day, but would be a totally different language. That was a fun challenge. So it was like, I was looking forward to that conlang wise.
That, go on, sorry.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say, with the success of House of the Dragon, then who knows what will come next in terms of prequels, sequels, the whole thing. Because I feel like this opens the door to then all these other projects either being created or greenlit or something. I feel like this is just a good thing in general for the GRRM universe and keeping us all employed.
Yeah, I hope that something with Dothraki comes back for two reasons. One,
you can speak it so well.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
You're like, that's my second language.
It's so much easier. It's so much easier for me. Just in terms of grammar, but also pronunciation. But also because I want to convince Duolingo to let me do a Dothraki course, and so we need something.
Petition.
Yeah. I wonder why they're hitting on High Valyrian, which has popped up so much in our feed lately. I bet you guys are getting a resurgence since Hot D came back in a big way. Damon sounds so sexy. How can I get on that level?
Yeah, but that's actually the reason why Valyrian, like, we're doing so much with the Duolingo right now is because there's a show where it's active, you know?
Right.
So it's like, if we can get something like that for Dothraki, it'd be cool to like put together a one on that, because that's a fun one. That's a fun language.
Watching the show with you tonight was a different experience, mm-hmm. because during the wedding, whenever they started speaking High Valyrian to each other, it was just like, wait a second.
But we all leaned in. So we watched the episode in a hotel room with a bunch of friends, and you joined us, and we're all leaning in around a laptop to watch it, and we're all trying to squint so we can read the translation over there. Meanwhile, you just posted up back with us.
You're like, I know all these words.
Yeah, I did that. It was a fun experience.
And I said to each other, we're like, this is the most boring part of the show always when this happens.
Right, right.
That's funny. It's funny because there was a line in there about that. He referred to Liner as boring. Yeah. So,
how do you say boring in High Valyrian?
Oh, shoot, I don't remember. But like, that was the thing. Like, all of those, especially for Damon's lines, all of his lines were written in such a way that it's like you, and his English lines are written this way too, where you get the sense of his personality in them. And there's a lot of like, not necessarily word play, right? But it's like, things worded just so.
What do you mean by that?
Okay, so I was thinking a very good example in English was this exchange in the last episode between him and Gerald. Mm-hmm. Is it Lord Gerald?
Yeah, the head of the Hightower House now.
Yeah. You know, that exchange.
Or Gerald, if you'd like.
That exchange between those two, and I wish we had the lines exactly, but it's like, you know. Just where he was saying things like, you know, it's a tragedy, you know, what happened, I don't know how to exactly just put your finger right on it, but basically it's like he says things in precisely the right way, so it's like it comes off as both, you know, cool and the type of thing where it's like you couldn't quite say that he's being insulting or being mocking. You couldn't quite say it, but you know it's there.
Yeah, I think Allison was like that in this episode too. I think that was actually a really mark of this episode, the way these folks that have power and are in some way in charge know that they can. We've talked about it before in the show. It's like we say people, it's really Viserys in the last episode when he was talking to Otto Hightower. It was like, speak plainly. Mm-hmm. It's like you could speak plainly, and that would fix a lot of the problems between all these people, including Damon and Rhea Royce, really. Yeah. If you just like spoke plainly, maybe we could avoid murder or the lifelong of rivalry that could turn into something that affects our kids eventually. But instead, since they're in this position, it was like when Larys and Allison were outside the Godswood, Larys is like, and Allison too, they're talking, but of course, I hold the princess at the highest esteem. Mm-hmm. They're constantly playing this game where we know and you know and they know who you're talking to, how you really feel, but I'm technically saying the right thing so I can't get in trouble for what I'm saying.
Except for when Kristen Cole speaks very plainly.
Yes,
but out of turn.
So maybe it's not good speaking plainly.
No, but see, that was a great example though, because she's doing the same thing when she's talking to him. But he's just not on that level. So it's like she says enough to where he's like, okay, she's got me. Therefore, I have to confess. Whereas everybody else is like, oh, she's got me. Therefore, I'm going to keep doing wordplay and not admitting it. And they just keep going back and forth. He wasn't about that life.
No.
He was like, I did it. I'm so bad. Please, instead of torturing me, can you just kill me?
Don't geld me, please. Honestly, fair.
Oh, the girl, man. I have a crush on, she rejected me.
Oh, what a loser.
The secret's out, just kill me. Poor Kristen Cole.
Dude, this episode was not kind to Kristen Cole. Holy crap. Oh, man. Especially when you think about Kristen Cole at the tourney, riding with Rhaenyra in the forest. You're like, oh, Christina, you're so fun. You're so fun to hang out with us. And then what happened all of a sudden?
I was so excited to see how, because we've been talking for a while, how they're going to handle the Kristen Rhaenyra rift. And I was so excited to see that they chose the route of him proposing to her, because it's such a bold, I need to read what exactly their conversation that they have, but it was such a bold moment for him to say, you know, run away with me and you can forsake your crown.
You took a lot
crown.
Of notes for this episode.
I did. Sharing a microphone with you is,
it sucks.
I hate it. But
you're like,
he's
I'm,
telling
I'm
her,
talking right now.
Yeah, I have to like shove you out of the way instead of just talking over you. He's telling her that you could marry for love, not for the crown. And she's like, I am the crown. I can't just walk away and leave everything. It was such a bold and great conversation between the two of them. And she says something like, you think I'm going to change or exchange my infamy for a bunch of oranges and cinnamon? Poor Kristen. He's just like a boy from a back home boy who kind of rose the ranks.
He's sitting there like, you know, I'm just a boy standing in front of a girl asking her to love him. And she's like, that's it.
We're doing business.
Yeah. I'm about to be the literal queen of Westeros. And you're trying to entice me. She's like, we can have it all. You just got to be my, you know, paramour.
Yeah. Oh.
I feel like when I was watching that scene, I felt like if he would have said it better, she might have went for it. But he set it up just so long and drawn out and so unsure. If he would have been like, hey, we should.
But it was sunrise.
Yeah. So you're supposed to
talk. It was kind of romantic.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. That's my point. Yeah. Everything else. And that's kind of the way she is with Daemon, too. That's why she said at the wedding, she was like, okay, cut through my father's men, take me to Dragonstone and marry me then. And then we'll do that. What's that, Hannah? Please lean into the mic and say your piece. You need to look at your notes.
I got nothing to say.
You're like, she makes good points in a moment like that.
Right.
Even Laenor would have been like, that's fair. Fair is fair.
And it's pretty cool, though, by the way, the setup of that scene where there's like so many tense things happening with so many people, but it's like the thing that happens is not the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean the thing that?
Well, it's just like, you know, all of this tension is built up with Alicent Hightower. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's Daemon and Rhaenyra's conversation, right? And then the thing that happens is just, oh, no, it's Kristen Cole going.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was
well,
go on, sorry.
You're not sure for a while what the chaos potentially is, and it's shot so well. We're skipping so much of that scene. First of all, their dancing really was, you know, sending me. It was hilarious. And
that's the answer I can get behind.
Yeah, that's exactly the move. That's exactly the hands behind the back move. That's exactly the move
you're
that also, I was like, are you serious?
There's a bird like that.
Yeah.
You know, that like one bird has its tail up. Yeah.
We're all doing it. They've got this dancing that is so strange but very specific, and we're just cutting to everybody's faces, and Viserys is unwell and Kristen Cole is unwell and Joffrey is unwell, and every single person in the whole audience, we're hearing whispering from what people are saying. It is such an amazing spectacle. And then something goes down and we have no idea what's going on. It's chaos, and you know, we can't locate our characters in the midst of everything.
So what happened was, you guys think that Kristen was upset about what was going on with Rhaenyra and Daemon?
And
he was trying to get to it?
No.
What do you think happened?
No, it was just he felt like he had been found out by Joffrey.
Yeah.
And, you know, just as when Alicent Hightower, you know, confronts him and he responds stupidly, mm-hmm. he did the same thing when he was found out by Joffrey and responded stupidly.
But at first he didn't respond like that. He just heard what he said and let it go.
Well,
why did he choose to act in that moment? Did he see him again and remember it or something?
Because it started getting worked up in his mind.
It was worming in his little head.
Yeah, he was just mulling over it.
So he just fought him in the middle of the thing?
Yeah, it's just completely stupid.
I don't understand how that could even happen. And where do we go the next episode with Kristen Cole if he literally lost shit on the consort of the guy that's marrying the princess right now?
Well, that's the thing, is because so far he's been very, for lack of a better word, plain. He's just an easy guy to project our own fantasies onto. He's got no true personality. And then tonight's episode, he really showed his true colors, exactly. Wouldn't you say?
I think so, yeah. I think he showed his true colors. And I think that everyone that really was a fan of him, and those guys, because there's like 29, 30 million people watching every episode now. I think that there's a lot of people that probably think that Kristen Cole is a pretty cool guy and that that was the guy that they liked in this show. And how do you deal with a character making the pulp of the face of someone that didn't attack them in the middle of a – that's – it's probably the most awkward – one of the more awkward scenes. I don't want to say most. There's been a lot of GOT, but it's got to be one of the more awkward scenes in Game of Thrones ever, and it was just in front of everyone. I don't even understand it. Like, how do you – how did they write that and go, people are going to make – they're going to think this totally makes sense. I do think it makes sense, but it's so random that it turned out like that. It was so violent but also so random.
I think that we missed – Kristen's, I almost called him Christini. Kristen's. My power. I think that we didn't see portrayed well enough, potentially, how upset he was, his face. I think that we got a little bit of his sulking, but I don't think we got enough of his anger or brooding or the fact that he's literally lost everything. I mean, he tried to commit suicide at some point in this episode.
After he did that.
But I think he may have done that before. He would have potentially done that before. I think that that was kind of just the path he was headed down based off of
the combo. He actually cared about his purity.
It seemed like he did as in some way.
I mean, that's he said as much earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
He was like, it's all I have.
So you believed him.
I do.
It's like, I have to marry you so I can make this right because my purity is gone.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's such a it's such a weenie little thing to say. You have to believe him.
Why is it weenie, though? Because if someone cool said that, then we would go, oh, he's so brave.
Damon said it. We're like,
right,
ugh.
Right. You'd be like, wow, he really believes in his oaths.
I don't know. Why? We got to talk about him, though.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, is Damon, do you really see him saying, well, I've been sullied now?
No. No. No, it's a different, it's a whole different dialect. He's speaking in a different tongue at that point. But yeah, no, Chris, it's just in the episode when they were traveling in the forest, he was talking about how his being made a member of the Kingsguard was the highest station that a Cole in the Marches of Dorne, serving under House Dondarrion, the highest that a Cole, someone from his namesake, in all of the years between the conquest or even back to the old kings that ran. Westeros, that's the highest they'd ever risen. And so there's a bit of us as fans of A Song of Ice and Fire and these Westerosi TV shows that knows, oh, that's cool. And there's a chance there's a thread of some kind of romance in him where that's a real thing. And it might be real enough to make him literally be the guy that's stressed out about it in this episode, like about his oaths and stuff. But we so openly see it as a weenie. He's a little weenie for doing it. Why is that? Is it because Rhaenyra's hot and he should just shut up? Like, what? Why? I think that's part of what they're trying to do in Hot D is make us examine how we feel because this situation's been projected. You know what I'm saying? It's so perfect. Even with Rhaenys, all these characters are so perfectly put in a position as like a mirror onto how we feel about certain people because – I feel like if someone else was in Kristen Cole's position, we'd have a little bit more, sympathy for him. But we're all kind of just mad at him.
Well, if I may refer to Castle Black, they are also supposed to be completely celibate. However, it's known that some of them...
Molestown.
What?
They go to Molestown.
Yeah. They do their thing, right? At some point, I think it's John and Aemon are having a conversation where it was either him or somebody else where, it's revealed that it's like, we're supposed to be celibate, but, you know, it happens. It's not the end of the world. And so it's like, there is a sense that this whole thing about, you know, the purity is, we as the reader, I think are supposed to recognize this is a bizarre institution and really believing in the institution, which we see as a bit ridiculous, is silly. That's why.
Why do we all love Barristan Selmy so much then? Because he believes in it.
Because he's old and powerful. But I think we were talking about on the last episode so much about everything that the Targaryens are doing is about upholding and believing in the system. And I felt like something I loved so much about this episode was the pageantry of it. And, you know, when the first of all, cute. Yeah.
Keep cutting to the feathers because there's David does the dance move.
So cute. I have a new idea for a headboard. But when, like, the Valyrians show up and they're marching in step and there's just so much pageantry. And I think that the same is going to apply, like you were saying, to something like the Kingsguard or the Wall. It's just this upholding the tradition and the we're going to go through the motions because it makes it all feel cooler and better and more special if there's something mystical and bigger than us surrounding what we're doing.
Like
and
what Rhaenyra said about her.
Exactly. I was saying that. That's
crown
what
of the Iron Throne looms larger than my whole family.
And Rhaenyra also was having that conversation with Laenor as well on the beach when they were like, we're doing this union.
That's when he had it, yeah.
It's a political thing. Yeah. And let's just get it done and get to work together, basically. And so let's uphold the system.
Well, I think that, okay, but I think there's two different takes on this. So there's Rhaenyra saying that, which I think we're supposed to see as, all right, good. You believe in the system, but you recognize that it is imperfect, so you're going to do what you can to make your peace with it. But what we see with Kristen is that I believe in the system, and therefore it has to be completely perfect, or otherwise it's a disaster. And that's what we
do. The system is all he has.
Yeah.
Basically.
And it's like he can't just be cool with it. You know what I mean? That was the thing. He could have just been cool with it. And he was just like, no, it has to be perfect. I've been sullied. And yeah. I think that's why I believe that we as the audience are supposed to be or expected to be less sympathetic. Just because everybody else recognizes that this is their unrealistic expectations that the system that they've created have put on them. But he is pretending like, no, it is realistic.
But pretending far enough to the point where he
snaps.
Kills. I mean, he doesn't kill him because of what it's kind of a byproduct of all the things that he's feeling. But that's quite the belief to then be drawn to that action in the midst of everything.
And so that's why he gets the L for loser.
What a deep, deep fall from Hottie that we all like with the body. Hottie.
He's incredibly hot. Let's acknowledge that.
But to turn into, you know, that just the way that he was looking when he was punching him in the face. I don't know. I don't think he's hot anymore.
No, you feel for him. And it's interesting and cool and exciting that Allison also went through that same, both of them completely switched. I felt like that conversation between the two of them in Allison's chambers or wherever they were, that was for the two of them, the moment where everything flipped without even knowing between the two of them that they were about to become allies. But her behavior completely different after that, his behavior completely different after that, even though they were both going after two completely almost opposite things in that moment. But I am looking forward to whatever conversation then brings them closer together after the fact, potentially.
So you're excited about this new not dynamic duo. What's that word for baddies? I don't know.
You tell us.
Yeah, give us another word for baddies there, genius.
Okay, so you're looking forward to this team up.
I am. So
this Two-Face and the Riddler.
Did you read Fire and Blood?
I've read some of it.
Bits and pieces and parts of it.
Okay. Yes,
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not like it's required reading for you to do your job on the show either, you know?
But like, I read the part of it, but then I got confused about what was what. And then I moved, and now I don't know where any of the books are. Sorry.
I'll give you a PDF if you want it.
Thank you.
George.
I mean, we're trying to keep the show spoiler-free. I'm just curious about...
Yeah, for the season, yeah.
As best we can, curious about kind of where... Because we talk about it all the time, having both read the story, and then we're just getting the opportunity to have the discussions about it with people who don't necessarily... Although, I mean, we can see where everything is going. I don't think it's really that complicated at all. But
you think you know where it's going? Mm-hmm. Having not read it?
Oh yeah,
but you know the script though. You've read enough of the script.
It leads to that. You know, it leads to that.
All roads lead to
the gunfight between the dragons.
Oh God! Can you imagine the size of guns those dragons would wield?
I'd say the Valyrian word for draw.
What's the Valyrian word for pull?
Hakogon. Hakogon, excuse me.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when you were reading these, I know you said for a while. I feel like now that we're halfway through the season, we can kind of like shake a little bit of details out of you.
Yeah.
What about it made you think it was so good? Because it seems like you had been like paid off to say, oh my God, this is so good. And I know what you're translating. I know the kind of limitations they give you, but also like you're not a bullshitter. You're pretty straightforward about stuff, but you were adamant on multiple occasions about how the impression that this made on you. And I mean, you've worked on stuff like Dune. You worked on Jodorowsky's Dune. I mean, you've seen brilliance.
I've seen that documentary.
You've seen things no one's ever seen before. Yeah. What really stuck out to you?
Here, hold on a sec. I'm gonna actually pull up
David's billion-dollar iCloud with all the secrets of Hollywood inside of it. That's the true. Ending of Dune 2 in his phone right now.
Thank goodness I just changed my password today. Okay, hold on a sec. Let me pull up some of these lines here. Here's just the first episode.
So this is what you got. You got it chronological? They send you ep one?
No, like I'm just pulling this up. These are, you know, Diamond's lines. So it's like, what do you think you're doing, Uncle? Sitting? This would well be my chair one day. It's great. Not if you're executed for sedition. It's like you haven't come to a court at an age. Court is so dreadfully boring, then why come back at all? I heard your father was hosting a tournament in my honor. The tournament is for his heir. Just as I said. I mean, this, I love these back and forths that are just between the two of them. They're so nice. Like, you've shared your cradle with a dragon when you were born. I want the same for my child. It's wonderful. Oh, gosh. And this, so hold on. Was this? No, that was episode 4. I want to jump to tonight's episode.
Yeah, because I was like, we need to read. Yeah. I need line for line.
Yeah.
I love that. Before we get too far, though, I love that episode 1 conversation. Real quick, I know you got your phone out. What did you think about Matt Smith's performance of those lines?
For episode 1?
Yeah, laying back in the chair and having that conversation.
Oh, that was a nice scene. That was a good introduction, too. Just
so casual.
I mean, an introduction like for my stuff, obviously, not for him. We've seen him before, but like... and it's also one of those things that's just a nice callback because, of course, you know, people who've seen Game of Thrones mm-hmm. remember Jamie Lannister on the throne. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, you could, it's like it sets him up very well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But yeah, hold on a sec. No, I remember that. Oh, God, I think it was episode 4. Did I have to translate? God, where was it? Would that it were. Can you imagine translating "would that it were" into any language?
To High Valyrian.
I don't even know how to say that in Spanish.
Right.
Like, would that it were.
It's like one word that means that.
What did I settle on? Hegnir hixos jailan. So that would be hegnir like that. Ixos would be the it is, but in the subjunctive, jailan. So would that it were, I wish it may be like that. It's kind of a way that God, that's a tough one. It makes sense in High Valyrian. I can't, but hegni rixo jailan, it makes sense. I'll just put it that way. But... yeah, so this was great, this little exchange in episode 5. So, you know, I was not aware that what I wanted mattered to you. This is not for you. Lainor is a good man and a fine knight. He will bore you senseless. I love that. And then, so, that was good. I'm sorry. I knew I had something good for that. So, no, it's not like a verb for it means to bore. So, he will bore you senseless. What I have here is Avi Edruliot Ilzilza. And what that means is he will transport you to dreamland.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And that means bore you senseless?
Yes, essentially. And so it created this, you know, Edrulion, which is kind of like the, it's like a place of sleep, basically.
Mm.
And so that was how I did that for He Will Bore You Senseless. I thought it really worked. And then, this de-emphatic. And also the English worked just the way High Valyrian would. Marriage is only a political arrangement, comma, I hear. That's exactly how you would say it in High Valyrian. I just, loved that.
The satisfaction on your face, though.
You
completely stopped podcasting with us, and you're just going through your iCloud of like, those are good moments.
It's like me looking through my camera roll,
right, exactly.
Like looking at pics.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, man.
I like it.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about episode 6 and 7. When you
have a question.
Some of those lines.
Right. I have a question, though.
Yeah.
About timeline.
Yeah.
Had casting been announced when you were translating these things?
No.
So you didn't have any.
Ooh.
And I don't know if that affects your work at all, but having the actor or character in mind very plainly when you're translating something, if that would maybe affect your work or not.
Every so often, like sometimes I will hear about it and sometimes I will think about it, but usually I'm working before things have been cast. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, in successive seasons, like you suddenly know the actor now.
Right. So how that could potentially change your... But, I mean, by that point, you've already established, like we're kind of talking about the way Damon speaks. We've already established his personality and his whole thing. And so it's not like you're going to necessarily change course halfway through just because...
And, you know, it's working too. So, mm-hmm. So that's good. But I don't know, but just to kind of circle back to the main point there, it's hard to kind of put into words, but like usually the least interesting writing is given to me to translate. And I think it's because whether it's consciously or unconsciously, the writer knows like, well, they're just going to say this in another language. So I can just kind of phone this in or just like say it literally or also like, and this is generally true of all the stuff that we work on as language creators. Most of the time we are translating commands.
Mm.
Like that's like 90% of what we translate is commands, background dialogue, things like that. Very prosaic things. Usually not very interesting things. And so it's cool when not only that we get to translate interesting stuff, but when it's like clearly there's been care put into the writing, it's just not something that we usually get. Mm-hmm. We get it's just like they have to say this and they're going to say it in another language,
right.
So just write it down.
Well, and also, and this is a question for both of you, the fact that we're getting all of this dialogue between Rhaenyra and Daemon specifically so far throughout the season. I mean, we haven't seen anybody else very much speak.
So.
Yeah, Viserys speaks
briefly.
And then we saw in the first episode, there are a couple of background things with the dragon tamers.
Yeah.
And then, mm-hmm. and then the dragon keeper elder comes in. He has the discussion with Viserys in episode 3.
Right. Early on, but for the majority of the time.
Yeah, majority of the time it's them too. Yeah.
It's the two of them. And so also wondering the significance of the fact that they're the ones communicating that way when, you know, Rhaenyra doesn't talk to her father like that.
That'd be so cool if she did, though. But it's a little bit more...
They're always flirting when they're talking.
It's a little more hot that they talk to each other like that, really, quite frankly. But it would be kind of neat if her and her dad talked that way too.
I just want to clarify something. When you said they're always flirting when they're talking, you meant Rhaenyra and Daemon, right?
Yeah. Not her and her dad.
Okay,
yeah, the incest really goes in a weird way in House the Dragon. No, yeah. Rhaenyra and Daemon.
Well, I had a thought about that, which is often when it reminds me of a situation in the real world where, I mean, it's a little bit different given the timelines, but in the real world, you will often have a situation where the first generation comes from one country to like the United States, and they speak their home language very, very well, and then learn English in a way. then their children grow up bilingual in English and the home language. And often what will happen is that child, especially the oldest child, will end up having to serve as a de facto translator for their parents, often in situations that they shouldn't really be in, like, you know, discussions with, like, you know, a doctor, with a bank, with like a mechanic and things like that. And you're talking about like younger kids, like 10 and 11. They might even be talking about things they don't understand. You know, not necessarily like bad things, but it's just like, you know, talking to a car mechanic who's trying to, you know, like, and the parent is trying to haggle, and this guy is trying to, like, you know, get as much money out of you as possible. And like, you're 11. You don't even know what a carburetor is. You have no idea what the word is in English. You have no idea how to translate it into your home language, right? And so what often happens is they grow up fully bilingual, but kind of resentful about their home language. And you'll often find that they will speak their home language only reluctantly, only if they have to, and will raise their children to kind of like really focus on English. And then that generation feels the loss and feels like, you know, why wasn't I raised speaking this language? It's really cool. This is where my family comes from, and so on. And so I kind of got that vibe where it's like, you know, Viserys is this guy where he can speak Valyrian. He's fluent, but he won't. He doesn't if he doesn't have to. Whereas both Rhaenyra and Daemon, they think it's cool, you know, and, you know, Daemon's the younger brother, right? And so, like, they appreciate their culture, their heritage, and so they use the language, and they use it with each other as kind of a bonding type of thing. So, I don't know, the situation was familiar to me when I was watching it. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So how's the rest of the season? Do you like it?
Oh, man, it's a steep drop off. You just stop watching. I mean, I didn't see like them, like, you know, Kristen actually like killing Rhaenyra and claiming the throne.
Right.
And then it's like
King Kristen.
And then the dragons start talking to each other in Valyrian.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Sean Connery.
I bet that was fun to write.
Yikes. Imagine Sean Connery and Morgan Freeman talking in High Valyrian to each other as dragons.
Zaldrizes Buzdarni Xosdaor.
Ads Razridis, Razridis.
Oh, man. So. Oh, gosh. You remember Reign of Dragons?
Oh, yeah. Of course, Matthew McConaughey. You remember Dragonheart?
Yeah, Dragonheart.
Dragonheart was good.
Yeah, so Dragonheart, that was the one with Sean Connery. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That's what I thought of it.
And
yeah.
Then Reign of Dragons was okay. So, yeah.
There's a lot of little dragon movies from back at that time. Things have really changed. The dragons were cool in this episode. How much did you like the Drehar stuff from come out, Drehar. Come out and face me. He's like, I'm going to feed you your crab. I can't stop
then
loving that
scene.
We got
to see the crab feeder's mask in Corlys's.
I was like, I miss you.
That was so cool.
Yeah, that seeing Driftmark was cool.
Yeah. That was, by the way, that was a lost opportunity. I tried to convince them to let me do a Volantine language because they wanted that for the...
I was thinking that tonight, actually, before you got here, I was thinking how that would have been a really cool opportunity to get some more of that. Because whenever they do, especially now in Hot D, especially, whenever they do go into High Valyrian, it sucked me in. Not just because the screen was small and I needed to read the subtitles tonight, but it's just the Millie Alcock and Daemon, and Matt Smith, it's just their little inflections on it. I don't know how you would rate it. You were showing us a rating system earlier of from GOT of the actors speaking a certain quality of getting things right, where it was like green and yellow, and you had the subtitles. I don't know what their rating would be, but it's so satisfying the way that they're doing it, and it really pulls me in. And I feel like a little bit of the, like you said, some more Valentine dialect would have been awesome in those craft figures. Even just like talking to his guys. I like the silent thing that they did as well, but just – a few of it, I think, would have sucked people in with some texture.
That was, you can blame me for that. That was my fault. Cause like,
I thought it might have been.
Yeah.
Like, you just wrote like, badly for that or something.
No.
They canceled it.
Well, it was like, they were like, you know, can he speak some Volantina? I'm like, well, I haven't created the language. So, like, you need to pay me to create it. And they were like, I mean, but it was just for like a small little bit, right? And so like
you're
it
like,
wasn't worth
house.
It. And so it's like suddenly he became like, you know, this silent bad guy. It's my fault.
So even your favorite creative projects are really just, it all comes down to budget.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of like, it's a fun thing though with a universe like Game of Thrones, because like every single time somebody gives the green light to one of these languages, it's like, okay, now it exists, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So it can be used for future projects and, you know, just keep building. So, you know, one of these days, I still think that there's a very fruitful potential show that's just like cool stuff happening in the free cities. And it's like, so say like maybe one of these days they do an entire show set in Volantis, right? And maybe they decide like, oh, they're going to be speaking English, you know, instead of Volantine there, but they're going to have a lot of interactions with people from Pentos, and we want them to have a language. So it's like, all right, we're going to create a language for Pentoshi. We didn't get one for Volantine, but it's like, okay, that's one more, right? That's just one more language that's out there and done, you know. Little by little, over the next 75 years, we'll get that whole thing fleshed out. And finally, I can get my dream of having
keep going
the Lazarine on screen.
Oh yeah, oh geez. I thought you were gonna say like old geese.
No, I was gonna as I call it, Swedish Dothraki.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about Ibanese? You ever thought about even the Ibanese dialect, the Whalers? Up north of Essos, oh. They got that island there.
Yeah.
Ib.
No, the island of Ib. No, I haven't done that one.
That would make me so happy if I got a little bit of that.
I forget. Did I tell you about the class that I taught before Con of Thrones? Where
at
Cal? I left from the class to go directly there. So it was called Game of Thrones and the Art of Language Invention or something like that. But it was like I wanted to teach a class on how to create a language. And the linguistics department at Berkeley are like, okay, but we want Game of Thrones in the title somewhere just to like get a draw. I'm like, all right, fine. And so
this
then,
is going to go viral.
And you know, I used that as a way to build the class because it was like, all right, you know, I'm teaching you how to create a language, but now we're actually going to couch it in something. And so what I said was like, here is the map, basically the big map of A Song of Ice and Fire. All right. And like, here are the languages that are like off limits. So it's like, you're not going to create something that's related to High Valyrian because that's already created, because you're going to create your own thing. But it's like, there's been nothing said about all of these places.
That was your class?
Yeah. And so
dude,
I was
that
like,
is so freaking cool.
So
man.
I said, choose a place.
Wow.
And create that language.
Dude, I would have lost my shit if I went to a class like that. That is so neat. What was the weirdest one that someone picked? Like Ulthos or something?
Somebody definitely wanted to do Ulthos.
Was it Ulthosi is what you would call it?
Like, well, I think I maybe steered them clear of that. There were two that did Jogos Nahai, which was cool. One of those was, I think, the best project. Lots of people really liked the Summer Isles.
Mm-hmm.
So there were like three, I think, Summer Isles languages.
Have you ever thought about that too? Like what they're... sounds would be like based on the descriptions from George?
I did at one point, but then I forgot about it. So I'm sure I would remember if I looked at the descriptions again, which is again where I would start. That's always where I start.
There is a Shai in Game of Thrones, right? So they couldn't have touched that one too.
No, you know what? I gave him leave. I said go ahead, because like even now, if I were to get the green light for a Shai, I don't know if I would go back to what I did. And I think I mentioned that, you know,
like in an old episode.
Yeah, in that presentation I did with Con of Thrones, that it's like I don't
the dead languages one.
Yeah, like I don't necessarily think that one was. I don't think it was necessarily canonical enough that I would hold myself to it.
Mm.
You know, I could see that as a blank slate.
We were talking about successor shows then. It was called Spinoffs in Dead Languages. That was the brain.
That's right.
The brainy idea for that panel. And it was like, whoa, 5 years ago? We're just five episodes in the hot D right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So you were talking about before how, I mean, you talked about before on this podcast before, and you haven't hidden this. Jacob Anderson was the guy who played Grey Worm, was the goat of doing the dialects for the way that you wrote it and doing it accurately.
Still is.
Who's the Jacob? And you played us, like, I would show like a Brett Favre clip of a really good throw. Like, look, there's 2 seconds left. And he threw it 49 yards. That's how you showed us Grey Worm talking with Daenerys earlier. You're like, this makes me feel, I'm not going to say what you said. Anyway, I'm going to leave that out. Who's the Jacob Anderson? You say that, right? Instead of saying something bad, say something good. Who's the new Jacob Anderson so far on Hot D for you?
Oh, brother, I don't know.
There's not a lot of options. It remains
to be seen.
Or Millie.
No, they gotta show me something. I think that Millie Alcock is closer to the sense of it. Like I hear echoes of Emilia Clarke in her High Valyrian, which is nice, I think. Both in terms of that, you know, Emilia Clarke had a very good sound, but also it feels familiar, and that's what I really like, because it's like, you know, this is the same language. This is what was in Game of Thrones, and so it was nice hearing her and hearing that echo so that you can get the familiarity, because that's what you should get. It should be like, you know, this is a new show, a bunch of new actors, but it's the same language. You should be able to hear that and feel that, you know?
I feel like that especially came out when she said Dracarys for the first time, when we heard Millie Alcock say that at the funeral, when we got that kind of through line of, she had her own pronunciation because, you know, it's a different... She had her own little accent to it. Yeah, you know, as a whole. But I felt like that was such a cool thing as a person watching the show to see that, like you said, this is the same language, the same people, the same family, really. And so that through line is pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we all get to share in that feeling of the relief that you feel whenever maybe you're in like a foreign land and you meet someone that speaks your language. Mm-hmm. We all get to kind of feel that because these movies or TV shows have given enough care to that kind of specific texture that, and especially when it's fake or made up, we all get to be that person when it's a callback like that. We all get to feel connected to something we all saw all those years ago, especially when they say it in the exact same way. So that's lucky. So did you do any training with her on that, or was it just did you record examples?
No, same thing, man. I always do that for every show. Yeah,
right. Well, luckily it worked out.
Yeah,
and luckily it's been working out so far. So what do you think about the show so far, honestly? I mean, I know that you enjoy working on it, but I know we watched it tonight and it was entertaining, but when you're seeing it at home, I'd asked you if you'd seen it yet. You're like, yep. And I know that, of course, you would have watched it because you worked on it, but are you liking this? Like, you like Game of Thrones? Like, do you like Hot D?
Oh, yeah. I'm vibing on it. I really look forward to just seeing not only what happens, but seeing the actors' performances. I really... have enjoyed, and I don't remember the name of the actor who plays Viserys.
Mm-hmm. Patty Considine. Considine.
Yeah, just incredible,
dude. So good.
And so
fucking politics.
He will be missed. But you know, that was.
What do you mean he will be missed, David?
I don't mean.
What do you know about?
I don't know anything about
him. I mean, this episode, he was unwell.
Just a flesh wound. I thought he's going
to
be fine.
Yeah, no, he'll be fine.
We wanted to ask David a few questions that you sent to us on social media. So I'm going to open my phone right now and ask a few of these questions and see if David will humor us with an answer to some of these. Sound good, Hannah? Cool.
It's cool that you're pretending that you haven't been on your phone the whole time.
Well, I've been trying to find these. I'm trying to locate them. Here's a question from Straight Savage Cole. What has been the most satisfying scene to translate High Valyrian for so far through episode 5? And he's asked, how excited were you to write the High Valyrian map for Daemon left for Nereid? Did you write that?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I didn't write it by hand, but like,
you drew that? That's your prop?
Come on, if I would have drawn that, it would have been so much better. I don't know.
Here's the question.
But yeah, like, through episode 5, because of course the first thing I was thinking of was episode 7. But,
oh, of course,
And then episode 9. But
have you thought about 10 lately?
What about it?
Episode 10. Have you thought about that lately? So satisfying.
I haven't.
Look at him leaving me in the dust.
I just. I know nothing about. No. Anyway. Let's see. So the most fun I think was I think episode 4. God. That would that it were. Would that it were. You know, my conlanging partner, Jesse Sams, she actually helped me with one of those lines from episode 4 where we had to translate bronze bitch because I just wasn't feeling creating a gendered insult, so we came around and did something else for it. It's based off of the word for seagull.
I don't like those either.
It was her idea, and it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So that's what's in there. And you know, it alliterates. And we got to use my favorite word, which was bronze.
Bronze is your favorite word?
I loved it. It was a stupid word. Like, so there was a, you know, braidi on this copper, and then braidasmion is bronze. And it's just a lovely word. I'm like, and it's like one of those words, just like, oh, I'm just creating this for me. I'll use it in D&D maybe. I'm never going to use it on a show. And there they just ask for it. They drop it in my lap. Love that. So yeah, that exchange, I think, was my favorite through episode 5. And I mean, we haven't talked about it at all, but getting to create the writing system for High Valyrian is literally one of the highlights of my conlanging career. And I did so much for the show. It really is in the background in this. You don't see it a lot. That was one of the few places where it really is in the foreground. And so that was cool that you're able to see it and everybody's able to recognize it. But no, like doing the writing system, being able to create it at all, and that they asked me to do so much in it in the season was, I mean, I've been waiting for this since 2009 because like that, I think that was when I first started thinking about what the High Valyrian language might look like, and if it had a writing system, what that might work like.
Whoa.
That was when I was working on Dothraki. That was when I was applying.
And you thought about High Valyrian at that
time.
Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
What attracted you to it versus Dothraki as far as the writing system?
Well, the fact that it had one.
Yeah.
Dothraki, of course, was not supposed to have one, which, you know, makes sense in world, that it would just be a spoken language. It wouldn't be written. Absolutely makes sense. But, you know, writing systems are my favorite thing to do for conlanging. And in that one, I was like, I feel like I know what the system should be, which was the system that I described, you know, at Icefire Con, which is, you know, essentially it's like Egyptian, but if it looked Roman, you know. And I was really pleased with the way it came out and just that I got to use it. And yeah, so that was tops, man.
Can you tell everyone, just in case they don't know, what conlanging is whenever you say it?
Like, yeah, sorry about that. Conlang stands for constructed language, and it's when you actively create a language. It's our word for it. It's in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Must be true, though.
Yeah.
And so the writing system part attracts you. You're more attracted to that than the actual spoken word part of it?
Okay, I mean, the conlanging part is a lot of fun, but it's just like, you know, it's visual stuff, you know. I started my life wanting to be an artist, wanting to be an animator at Disney, you know.
right across the street.
Yep, that was my dream. And so visual art was all I did up until 16 years old. And like the only thing about language that interested me up until I was 17 was Egyptian hieroglyphs when I was introduced to that in sixth grade.
Early emojis.
Yeah, it was incredible.
So are you an emoji fan?
I wasn't when they came out. I didn't get it. But now see how Unicode is working with it. It's like, I get it. But still, it's problematic. I could talk for hours about that.
That was much more serious of a response than I expected from you. From your past responses.
I've given it
You're
a
like,
lot
I've
of
thought about this.
Oh, yeah, I've given
you
a
can't,
lot of
you can't. You don't say the word Unicode unless you've thought about it before.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Someone asked us about that, about the similarities between, you were talking about Egyptian characters versus High Valyrian characters. So it's really interesting that you brought that up. So the character part of it is the artistic aspect mixed in with the logical building blocks that all divide and multiply with each other.
It's incredible.
Hannah, you got something?
Yeah, I'll ask this question from Yakar on Twitter, who says, how many glyphs were created for House of the Dragon, and will we ever in the future get a complete guide for the writing system?
So at present, there are 395 glyphs, but that's not going to be the end of it. I really wanted to aim for like between 500 and 700. And so I think I'll get there one day. And the nice thing about the way that this works is like, it doesn't matter if, say, a word would be spelled with one glyph that I create later and it was just spelled phonetically in episode one, because the spelling system is not regular, which is really important. That was something I found so fascinating about, both studying Middle Egyptian, but also like looking at like Chaucer's work, for example, is just like when spelling systems weren't standard, like people would just spell things different ways. Like the same person would spell the same word different ways in the same document. And so it's not a nightmare if something is spelled one way in season one and another way in season five. It's just, you know, that's just the way
evolution
it works.
Of language.
Yeah. And just the choice of the writer, which is something that is, it's something that we don't really have like in modern days, because spelling systems are pretty fixed. You know, if you're doing something that it's seen as divergent, and it's not really just like free choice. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, it's just simple stuff. Like imagine one thing in English, we can spell gray either with an E or an A. That's just one little thing where we could just make the choice. And it's like, it's a weird kind of personal choice. Like someday, like you have to confront yourself with, how am I going to spell this? You know?
I'm literally thinking about it right now.
Yeah. And it's like, you may change over the course of your life. You may change at the time of day.
Who are
it's
you texting? Kind of,
yeah. Like
that kind of thing.
It's just kind of a thing, you know? Now imagine like if that were exploded to the entire spelling system, you know, suddenly it's like
to everything.
Yeah. And that's just like, you know, yeah.
I don't want to imagine that. I lost a spelling bee when I was a kid for spelling valor the English way.
You probably lost it, Jesse.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I probably did. I spelled it V-A-L-O-U-R.
Oh, Falour.
But it's right,
That'll
though.
That'll stick with you.
It's right, right?
In Canada, it is.
Come on now. I thought we were friends. You know it's right, right? V-A-L-O, it's in the dictionary. I immediately went and found the dictionary. Anyway, it's the same thing.
You would have fit right in 1474.
Mm-hmm. I'm done with this. Let's move on to someone's question. Here's one that'll butter you up.
Ooh.
From Asha, not Yara. When was the first time you heard someone speak a language you created? Your favorite time? I was in the room when he heard a Danny, this is from Asha. I was in the room when he heard a Danny monologue being performed at Ice and Fire Con. Oh, it was amazing to be there in that moment and see his excitement. Tell us about that.
That was really cool.
That sounds really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the first time, of course, was at the premiere for Game of Thrones, because I was at the premiere for season one.
Someone spoke Dothraki there?
In the first episode.
Oh yeah.
Did she mean in like
at Ice and Fire Con someone performed that? Like,
yeah. No, that was cool. But is that what the question meant?
Like, yeah, your favorite time that you saw someone speaking your language, probably. Like, the first time.
Did she mean on screen or just in general? Like,
I think in general,
or in real life.
I think either would probably the first time you heard someone speak his language. You can answer this any way you want.
Right,
actually,
on. Well, this is what we'll do. Okay, so at Ice and Fire Con, I happened to be. I don't know why I did this, because like I was the one that did this, but like I scheduled my book signing at a time where there was a big like cosplay event in the other room, so of course nobody came. but my signing was directly adjacent to this room, which only had one of those hotel walls.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like I could just, you know, hear everything going on. And then suddenly I hear somebody speaking like Valyrian. I'm like,
oh my God,
what is that?
David, that's
what
so
is that?
Dude.
And so I get up and because like there was a little back door between the two rooms, like where there was a partition in the wall. And so I go and listen to that. And I'm like, damn, listen to that, listen to that.
That's so nice. That's your shining, but it's a happy ending.
Yeah. You know, actually, one time that I heard somebody, so this is totally different, but you were there too. You were there when somebody came and was straight up speaking Trigetta slang to me, and I did not even recognize it.
That's from the 100 for everybody that doesn't know.
It's the language I created for the 100. So Zach put me up because we were doing a thing for Shake Shack. Mm-hmm. I named a Valyrian.
Do you remember what was on the
burger.
Front?
Hrolitzorakion.
That's it. I was going to say that.
Yeah. And so
I wore that to Shake Shack one time, and this guy goes, "Wow, you love Shake Shack." I was like, "This is the only shirt that fits me right now."
Man. Anyway, so like we were all going to get like free burgers, and so we invited this girl whose name is Trigzetta on
Tumblr.
On Instagram.
Okay.
And you know, she met up with us, and she was speaking Trigetta slang to me, and I was like, shit, man.
Yeah.
First of all, it was really fast because she was really good, and she is really good. But also, she has developed her own unique accent.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
And like international phrasing for it. And so like it didn't click in my brain that was Trigetta slang. And so I was really embarrassed because, like, you know, she was meeting me for the first time and it was a really big deal. And I'm like,
You really blew it.
I'm like, what'd you say? Yeah, I completely blew it. I was very embarrassed by that. But she was so cool. Like, I think she can straight up speak Trigetta slang, which is awesome. But now she is, in fact, trying to do Valyrian.
Mm. Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah, she's got a new Instagram, and it's Valerio Munha, I believe. Valerio Munha, Valerian's mother. So you can look for her there, and she's learning Valerian using Duolingo and, yeah. Going to help people out because, like, she does videos about. She like did all of these videos, like breaking down Trigetta slang, all of the like every line from every episode. She's got a video up. It's really cool. So yeah, now she's doing Valyrian.
It's got to be a wild experience because language is such a living and breathing thing. A wild experience to see and hear someone put their own spin on something that came out of your brain, and they've got their own accent and their own flair and their own desire behind what they're saying. That's got to be a pretty wild experience.
It's really strange. It's like going to an event, like say a work function, and you see somebody there that you don't know who's very obviously wearing your clothes.
Mm.
Like out of your, like not just like they have the same clothes, like they went to your house and they took your clothes.
Ugh.
And they're wearing them. And they don't quite fit.
Mm, mm-hmm.
That's what the experience
that's
is.
Such
unless
an
they're
interesting...
Jacob Anderson, then they fit oh so good.
Oh,
you guys are the same size, baby.
No. With Jacob Anderson, it's like he puts on my clothes and it's like, oh, that's what that's supposed to look like.
That's such a good metaphor.
Oh my God, that's so nice. You really did do a good job. That thing we were watching earlier, I was so pulled in, and I hope that there's some more like that in Hot D where the dialogue lasts that long. It was just like I said, I don't know what it is. It just it's especially when it's something that I don't recognize from the world that we live in.
Yeah.
I'm not biased against any other languages in this world, but there's just something about something that's so unrecognizable where you're just like, what is going on this screen? They sound so serious right now.
Yeah, he's the best. He's still the best. But like he's with it's him and three other actors that I consider to be absolutely superior. So Jacob Anderson is still, I think, the best. And then, you know, but also up there was this day player on Defiance named Hannah Cheeseman, who was incredible, who just did cast of them like nothing. And then Lucy Fry, who was on Bright, played the Elven girl, did everything perfectly without like seemingly any practice. It was incredible. And then Charlie Murphy on Halo. I'm so glad everybody's kind of
tell me
here.
More.
The hardest, like it's the second hardest language to pronounce that I've created. You know, like she's doing words like Ngagomo and
what was it? Covenant language is crazy.
Yeah, and like Okogaha. It's like.
It's the stuff you like, let's be honest. You like that stuff.
I love it. She does it so well. It's nuts, man. I actually just had a coaching session with her yesterday, and like she just ran through the lines. She did every single one. Every single one was perfect because that's how good she is. So anyway.
Did you watch that? The Halo show, did you watch it?
I watch everything I work on, sir.
Oh, yeah?
Almost everything. There's one thing I don't watch.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell you. Just had a not good experience on that one.
Okay, here's a question from East Coast Chase. What's the hardest part of working in the existing Valyrian words into the language?
What do you mean?
What's the hardest part of working in the existing Valyrian words into the language? Like, probably think things like Drakkaris that are written in canon.
Oh.
It's a basic, it's from the beginning probably, yeah. But it's good to remember.
Yeah, the truth be told, that wasn't hard at all. Because there was, you know, Drakkaris, right? There was Valonqar, which cursed us with a Q. I mean, don't spell Q without U if you don't want it, man. But then other than that, there was just Valar Morghulis and Valar Dohaeris. And those two phrases really helped me build the main part of the language. It helped me build out the verbal system. It helped me build out the noun system. And then other than that, there were a bunch of names which just helped flesh out what the nominal declensions were going to be. So, I mean, it was nothing.
Of course,
the
nominal declensions.
Yeah, but like, no, seriously, though, like it was nothing. It was great because there really wasn't very much. So it was super easy. And of course, that's the case with all of George R. R. Martin's stuff, because the way that he doesn't create languages, but the way that he does it, the way that he sets about it, is systematic in a way that's very helpful for a language creator who's building on it afterwards. But yeah, like other than that, there really weren't other Valyrian words. There were words that were clearly Valyrianate or descended from Valyrian. Like, I came up with the etymology for Sivas. Did you know that?
No way, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
So Sivas is, of course, I mean, it doesn't look Valyrian at all. It's modern, right? But what it comes from is the word for strategy.
No way.
Yeah.
In what language?
In High Valyrian.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So it's like in High Valyrian, it's there is what is the word? It's like klivakion or something like that. Klivakion, and then the idea is that when this became the word Sivas, it came from one of the three cities. And so basically, you know, if I'm fleshing out one of those three cities' languages, that tells me what the sound changes were. Right, going from High Valyrian to that language, that, you know, it starts with this in High Valyrian, but then becomes Sivas here. So it's like, you know what happened, right?
What made you want to do that?
Oh, man, because I knew that, like, it was a really cool thing. And you know what it reminded me of? Like, the word for chess in many languages actually comes from the same word as checkmate.
Hmm. Oh.
So that's why it's shakhmatoy in Russian. Which comes from a really old expression that means the king has fallen. And so it was like, that was what I was trying to aim for, where it's like, by the time it gets to Sivas, you don't even know what it refers to anymore, but it actually referred to something way, way, way back when.
Do you think that Tolkien did that too, with the way that he created Elvish, that he wrote the books maybe, and it did similar to Martin, where it all makes sense and I put the right structure and now let's flesh it out?
Oh, no. He created the languages first.
He created it first?
Yeah.
Before he wrote the lore?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
How do you feel about that?
Good. No, but that's the thing. Like, he was a language creator first.
He's got to be created, like, one of your gods, right?
Well, he's considered the godfather of modern conlanging, sorry. But, he created... He was a language creator first. He created the books because he wanted a place for his languages to be spoken.
That's pretty cool.
I had that book when I was a kid, the Elvish Handbook.
Ah, there you go.
I did not do much with it, but I like to look at it.
That's pretty cool.
You really think that that's a thing, that he created the books to be a vehicle for that?
This is not me like making this up.
Right, but do you really believe
it's widely known?
Do you believe it though?
Yes.
Damn. That's pretty dank as far as a creator is concerned. Like, you're coming from a different set of circumstances if that's what you're pushing out to the world.
Yeah.
So what are you trying to do with all this?
Like, I'm having fun, man.
Okay.
Look, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is it's really cool, like, this world that George R. R. Martin has created, because there's so much linguistic diversity in it, which is not something that you see for fantasy. Like, it never happens. And especially that it's done, like, well and actually set up well. And so I just think that's really cool. And, you know, it's nice to be able to kind of flesh out a corner of it, you know. I'd love to flesh out as much as I can. I'm probably not going to be able to do all of it. And, you know, maybe one day somebody else will pick up on it and do more with it. But it's just cool to be a part of it. It's cool to be a part of something where it's like the world building repays the effort that you put in, because I may or may not have been involved in projects where that's not the case. Can neither confirm nor deny.
So do you think we're going to get more GOT TV shows than Hot Damn?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, like, I'm not saying that with insider information. I'm just saying that with, yeah, I'm just looking around, you know, seeing how things are going, and seeing that the response that House of the Dragon has got. I think that what this tells HBO is that they did the right thing, you know, and so that they're going to move forward in roughly the same way. And so, yeah, I fully expect for there to be more shows. I still would love, and I know I said this before, I still would love to see a sequel show that's just Arya exploring the world.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm.
I think that would be cool. I think it should be like Star Trek, you know, but just in the GOT universe, I think it would be neat.
She goes down to the depths of her, or the deck of her ship, and she goes tea Earl Grey hot. Someone glass candles into her.
Can you tell us your favorite House of the Dragon episode number?
The one that jumps out to me is 7. That's the one that I.
So 7's what we got to look out for.
And I hope that I'm remembering the number correctly, because that was the interesting thing was I just got a huge big roll of all the dialogue from all the episodes, but I'm pretty sure that it was 107.
So 107's got more of you in it.
I think so, and 109 does. Gosh, it was either like There's a lot. There's stuff coming, basically. There's stuff
the
coming.
The best is yet to come, I heard.
That's what I was told.
That's what I was told. Okay.
Cool.
So at what point in Hot D did you maybe turn to whoever you're watching with or just inside of yourself and go, yes, all right, it's like maybe we're doing this again? Has that happened to you yet? Are you there yet? Do you feel like it's gotten to that point yet?
I am feeling cautiously optimistic. this could be really good. This could be really good. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks, David, for real, for coming on for our
500th episode
of Game of Thrones. I'm gonna try to say words right, especially when you're here. You must be really judgmental and people speak weirdly around you sometimes.
Only you.
That's what that is.
I expect every single one of your words to be perfect. You and only you. Oh, you
have
to
pay attention well.
You have to uphold the legacy of Brock Mansion.
If Brock Mansion were here, I feel like we would know exactly what to say. We'd make him so proud. And the fact that he's not here, I just hope he doesn't listen. Brock, I love you.
He's just up there like Mufasa in the clouds. I'm proud
Remember
of you.
Remember, Brock. And then it says sex still.
Your insight into and just your enthusiasm about language in general is very exciting to me. So I always love when we get to sit down and have a conversation. So thanks for joining us in person. It's been fun too.
I absolutely love being on your podcast, but I really count it as special that I got to be on this one. So thank you so much.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Let's not say anything else. We love all of you that are listening. David, I love you too. And we'll see you on the next episode. And here's to 500 more, everybody, and George and HBO. Peace.